What's up, guys? Matt and Leslie back at Table 40. Today, we're excited to welcome in Stephen and Amanda Miller. We've known them for a long time. I'm not sure how to introduce you guys now. I would have said, like, kind of music, and we met him at a church in Texas, and then he showed up at a church in St. Louis that we went to, and we became friends, and he was doing music, but now he's like this famous YouTube guy. So I'm going to let you tell us how you would introduce what you're doing, you two. And so I've watched some of your YouTube stuff. So they have seven kids. So it starts there. So they're heroes. They have four, and I feel like we're overmatched. So they have seven. So tell me how I would introduce you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're sort of a jack of all trades family a little bit.
Yeah, got a lot going on.
But I think the main thing we're doing is just telling our story of our family, and really trying to highlight the beauty of diversity, the beauty of adoption, and really just share the hope of Jesus through the content that we're creating, and kind of give a peek into what our family looks like. I think, you know, we started doing adoption YouTube like just a little over 2 years ago. So it still feels weird to say we're YouTubers, you know, or whatever. I think more just storytellers or creators would be a better way of putting it. So, but yeah, that's kind of what we're doing full time now, is creating videos for YouTube, social media in general, and having a blast doing it.
So what about your music? Are you still doing music stuff, Stephen? I know you have albums and written music, and is that still something that you have passion for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've done music pretty much my whole life, so that's a big part of who I am. It's a big part of our family's dynamic and DNA as well. But taking a little bit of a break right now from making much new stuff. I have got a couple little things in the fire right now, but nothing big, no big albums on the way anytime soon. Of course, this year, you know, live music is all but gone, you know? So it's interesting, because last year I actually, middle of the year, canceled all my 2020 events. And you kind of do that with a little trepidation, because you're like, oh man, this means probably that I'm not going to get asked to do these things again, you know. Didn't realize at that point that they were all going to get canceled anyway. So maybe that gives a little grace there. I don't know. But we just decided last year we really needed to take 2020 to reset, focus on our family, and focus on this ministry that God's really given us through YouTube. And we haven't regretted it. It's been awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredibly awesome. And YouTube is it's a big deal. I mean, I'm very familiar with Preston Plays. And, you know, he's kind of a big deal to Reed Holiday. And I feel like I dream of Preston all night long. Like, anyway.
So, I feel about that, Matt.
His voice is just in my mind all the time. But, well,
he's super loud in the living room. And it's like the anthem of our living room right now. Plays his voice. So.
Yeah,
hopefully it's a phase.
Oh, yes,
we need to move him on over to your stories. So that'd be great. All right, so let's talk a little bit about how you guys met. We always love to do that, as you know. That's our favorite question on Table 40. Is just to get like this foundation of what your story is, right? And so, because we like y'all. This has been such an enjoyable experience for Matt and I to be able to tell stories and encourage people in their relationship with the Lord. And so let's get the very beginning of how y'all met in the beginning of the Miller story.
Mm-hmm. You wanna go?
Well, we were high school sweethearts. So yeah. We met when I was 15 and he was 17. Yeah. And we were friends for about a year or so, but he took me to his prom for our first date. So it was a pretty good start.
Yeah, I saw her across the room in the cafeteria one day. She was sitting next to my friend Matt, and I asked my friend, I said, dude, you got to tell me, like, who is that girl? And he was like, oh, that's Amanda. She plays keys in my band at church. I was like, I'm going to go meet her. So I like sit down next to her. Hey, I'm Steven. And she's like, hey,
you're very
weirdo.
Like, very nice, but very forward. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, really interesting that you would just approach me like that. But
yeah. So we started dating about what, 2 weeks after prom?
Yeah. Yeah. So prom was like our first date, but we didn't really start dating because he was planning, because he's 2 years older, he was about to graduate. He was planning to go off to college. And so he sits me down a couple of weeks after prom and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to make this official. We're going to start dating. And he sits me down and he's like, listen, I'm going away to college and I just don't want a long distance relationship. And I was crushed because I really thought like, you know, there's something special here. I really, really like this guy. And I remember going to my job that afternoon, and I was talking to my friend, talking to my boss, and I was crying and I was like, he doesn't want to date me. It's over. And, I remember my boss had told me, she's like, if it's meant to be, it will all work out. And I remember thinking like, whatever, I'm never going to talk to that guy again.
I was literally in the background being like, what the heck is wrong with me? Like, why would I do that? I'm a senior in high school. I'm like 300 pounds. I've never had a girlfriend. No girl's ever been interested in me at all. Right. And so here I am. There's this girl that like actually likes me. I'm like, you're an idiot. What are you doing? So I'm like, what, made a terrible mistake. So I go and I'm like, hey.
Yeah. He called me up a couple of weeks later and he's like, listen, I think I've changed my mind and I just want to really see where this goes. And I think I made you work for it a little bit. I was like, well, I don't know.
Well, you broke up with me a month later and we started dating. You broke up with me a month later. So that was horrible. So then I spent the summer like chasing you.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
I'd say that first year was kind of ups and downs, you know, on again, off again. But within that first year or so, like we were talking about like, you know, I think someday we're going to get married kind of thing. So, within that first year, we knew it was pretty serious.
Yeah.
So. That's awesome. That's how Matt and I weren't high school sweethearts, but we dated really young. And I love that. We were actually had a conversation recently with this guy named Vince, and he also got married really young. And he said, what did he say exactly? It was really cool. He said that his wife helped him grow up. And it was kind of interesting how he said that. I'd never really thought of that before, but I feel like for us, when you date really young, you get married really young, like your partner does help develop kind of your personality and the things that you love. And like there, it is a, he said something about parenting, like the partner helped. I don't know. It was pretty smart what he said. Obviously I remembered every word, but, but the gist was, it was so good. I remembered everything about it, but the gist was, is that the partner really does help you mature when you're young like that. And I love that. And I think that's true of our marriage as well. And so, anyway, how about your girls? How are they? Do they have boyfriends yet?
Gosh, no, but we are probably really close to that. Our oldest just turned 17. So she's becoming so independent. And we know that that's probably right around the corner. I don't know if Steven's ready for that.
Well, I was inspired this morning. I was like, you know, Jackson is 17. We've been talking about this forever. Like, Reese and Jackson.
Well, it's wild because Jackson does have a girlfriend and she's great. Yeah. And it's like, it's so weird to look at your kids and you remember what it was like at 17. Because his birthday was just yesterday. And I was sitting there thinking like, oh my gosh, he's 17 years old. And I've done really well thus far with not being like a crybaby about your kid getting older. But yesterday I was a disaster. And so, I mean, I just like all these memories started flooding in my mind of little baby Jackson and his little baby voice. And now we've got like a man in our house. And you start thinking about, okay, Matt and I met when we were 18 and 19 and got married, you know, really young. He's closer to marriage. I mean, I like had a meltdown yesterday. Yeah. But it's so interesting when you have kids that are 17, like you really start thinking about, it just didn't seem that long ago, guys, when we were 17 years old.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So true. Yeah, all the mixed emotions around here. And of course, she's loving it. You know, they're so ready for their independence and all of that. But
she's driving and all the, you know, her sisters are just a couple years younger than her. So they're all like going to the coffee shop and doing school together at the coffee shop. And it's a lot of fun. So
yeah, it's a fun dynamic for sure.
But no boys as of yet. I know they all would love to have a boyfriend, but Mr. Wright hasn't come along yet. Mm-hmm. So.
So how have they handled all the moving around? So obviously we've moved around a lot and with kids and you guys have 7 kids, as I mentioned earlier, and all kind of a wide range of ages, but how have the older ones, I guess, handled a lot of the moving you guys have done?
I think it's been a challenge at times because we have moved every 3 to 4 years for the most part, sometimes less than that. And I think that just the challenge is, you know, getting them plugged in again. And once you start to make those relationships, then having to move again, that's really challenging starting over. This time around, it was such a different dynamic because we weren't having to move because of a job. And so this was something that we kind of as a family dreamed up, like if we could live anywhere, you know, where would we want to go? It did feel like San Antonio was not going to be our long-term home. And so it was really cool to have that conversation with our kids, like where would we want to go to really settle down and plant some deeper roots?
Yeah.
And so I think they were really excited because we all got to be a part of the process of doing that.
And like their friends aren't necessarily tied to the place that I work or the job that I'm doing or the youth group that the church that I happen to work at or whatever. Like we're as a family getting to choose where are we going to go to church, where are we going to go and, you know, do life? Who do we want to hang out with, you know? And so that's been a really different vibe with this move that's kind of marked it from all of our other moves. And in some ways there's a lot of like up in the air about that, right? Because we're landed. We've been here for 6 weeks. We still don't necessarily have a home church. We've kind of been checking places out. We don't really know where we're going to be long-term in the area. We're renting for the year while we look for land to build. So, you know, there are those questions. That's like, okay, do we want to like make friends that are geographically based or just like go with like the greater Nashville area and be willing to drive? And thus far, I think we're all just kind of willing to drive and therefore making friends all over the city, which is really fun.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been an easier transition this time because of that. Our kids have been excited and so because it hasn't just been like we're gonna follow, you know, daddy while he takes a new job, but this is something that I feel like everybody kind of has ownership in and feels like, you know, we made this decision together. So
yeah
one thing I think we failed to mention is the fact before you guys went on this path of doing more of the YouTube ministry, I would call it that. And you were in professional ministry prior to this. And so that's how we met you, is that you led worship at the Austin Stone, and then you led worship at the Journey in St. Louis. And so I believe that's where we officially met, was in St. Louis, but we had recognized you because we went to the Austin Stone when we lived there. And then I remember we went to the Journey and I was like, wait a second, that guy like sounds and looks familiar. And it was because we had just moved to St. Louis at the time and we were looking for friends too. And so I will never forget that. Like Darren was a pastor and we met you at church. And it was just so comforting because we were like, oh, they were there and we were there and now we're here. And so let's talk about ministry a little bit for a minute. So when were you called to ministry? I think because I know you, I know it was a calling, and I've always really respected the purity of both of you all in that calling. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm good at that, I'm just going to jump into that. It was what I love about you guys is that Jesus does really matter to you. It's not just this thing that you're pretty good at ministry, so you're just gonna, or pretty good at music, so I'm just gonna go into that lane, because that does exist.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think early on, when I was called to ministry in high school, so, you know, I kind of grew up in the church, and I had no desire to do church music at all, because for me, church music was hand-wavy guy, like throwing his hands in the air and, you know, singing hymns with like epic timpani solos and things like that. And I just really didn't want to do anything with that. But, you know, when I was in high school, I saw a band lead worship for the first time. And I was like, man, like, I've always loved music. I was that guy who, you know, on the school bus, if like a Richard Marx song came on, I'm singing at the top of my lungs along with the radio. And the kid next to me is like, hey, Steven, who sings this song? And I'd be like, Richard Marx. And he'd be like, well, let Richard Marx sing the song, you know? So that dates me a little bit. it's okay. So, you know, I loved music. I wanted to do music. I didn't want to do church music. And so then for that first time in my life, I really connected with church music. Cause it was like, this is something that I would listen to, you know, this is something that I could, I don't feel uncomfortable asking my friend at school, like, hey, come check out this band with me or whatever. So at the same time I was like, man, but like, of course everybody wants to do music. Like I don't, you know, I don't necessarily trust myself to like be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go do music for God now or whatever, you know? So, I just sort of sat on it, prayed about it. And my youth pastor asked me, if I'd be willing to start leading worship for our student ministry. And it was so bad. Like it was the worst thing ever. I'm like trying to write songs and there wasn't really a worship industry at the time, right? There, like right now, if you talk about Christian music, it's literally all worship music. That wasn't the case back then. There was like, you know, two bands doing worship music. Hillsong was doing like Shout to the Lord, and that was like super edgy at the time. And otherwise it was like there wasn't really much else. There was like I'm Trading My Sorrows and Waves of Mercy and, you know, other campy songs. So trying to write songs and things like that as a high school kid, like I go back and read some of those lyrics and I'm like, I was the biggest dork in the world. So which I still am, so that helps. But I think that was just that first step of obedience to say, you know what, I'm not really qualified. I don't even play guitar. I learned guitar so that I could lead worship, you know, and try to write music. And so God just kind of had his hand of blessing on that. And I started getting asked to do that, you know, more and more outside of my youth group as a senior in high school. And so then, that just sort of developed. And, you know, you talk about the Austin Stone, like Matt Carter, who was the pastor at the Stone at the time. We were in a community group together because there was like the church had just started and Matt was like, you know what you need to do? You don't need to go to college for this, which it's kind of funny. He's like, you need on the job training. So here's a stack of books you need to read. And like gave me like all these systematic theology books and stuff like that. And he's like, and you just need some coaches who can like tell you, you know, when you're being a knucklehead. And so sure enough, you know, that was kind of my training as a worship leader. And, you know, we did it forever. I will say like sometimes, and we notice this about ourselves, like sometimes in ministry, you do get to the point where you're a professional Christian, you know, you're a professional pastor, you know, and there are even like books from seminarians who are like how to be a pastor and stay a Christian, you know, kind of thing like that. So you can really easily get burnt out because you do see a lot of the inner workings of the church and that can be hurtful sometimes. And you see a lot of people who are going through a lot of pain and that can be hurtful sometimes. And so for us right now, this is a different season of ministry that's been really good, almost a really good reset for us because we're kind of relearning, or at least I am. You probably never experienced this, but relearning to love Jesus not for a paycheck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like learning to love Jesus because he's beautiful and he's wonderful and he's glorious and he's powerful and everything that your heart could ever want, you know, and that's so much better than a paycheck, you know? So,
and you mentioned mentors, but I wanted to speak to that for a minute because that was such a huge part of this journey for us, like early on as kids, you know, getting married, growing up, starting ministry, mm-hmm. not knowing anything, not knowing how to be married, not knowing how to do ministry. We had several key mentors who had just, we were just you know, much older, much wiser, had been in ministry for decades, that were coaching us and really walking with us as a couple.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was so key in so many ways mm-hmm. for our health and for us to develop and mature. And they were also the ones that were able to like speak into it when we were saying like, I really feel like the Lord is calling us to take a step back. And because that was very scary, like this is all we'd really ever known. And Stephen definitely has been called to worship leading. And so to hear kind of something different from the Lord, you know, that took a leap of faith to change directions. And so I thought that was so good that we had a lot of godly mentors who had walked with us for many years, able to say, you know, yes, I can see the Lord doing this now. And so when we took that leap of faith and really kind of just started on YouTube sharing our story and seeing God just immediately start blessing that, it was just very, very interesting to see how all that came together.
Yeah.
It really was the Lord leading every step of the way. So
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, you know, you said it really is a ministry. I would totally agree with that. And in a lot of ways, I feel like what we're doing, it's very different from traditional ministry in that, you know, we're just kind of trying to show like what a normal Christian family lives like, you know, I hope, and do it in a way that doesn't make Jesus look bad, you know? And so we're finding people responding to that and seeing like, well, this is kind of different from everything else out on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of drama on YouTube, a lot of clickbait on YouTube, a lot of just gossip, and it can be a pretty dark place sometimes. And so for us to kind of be doing something different from that, I feel like has sort of stood out. And that's been really humbling to see, because from the get-go, we're like, we never want to make Jesus look bad. Like, we never want to make that even a question of what we're doing.
Well, just to like live your life, you know, and have some of that captured for people to see can be kind of nerve-wracking and scary at times. It seems like a big responsibility, but it has been really cool to see just the opportunities that have come from that. Like, we pretty quickly started getting messages from people across the world. And it's like, you know, people saying, oh, hey, I live in Saudi Arabia and I've heard of Jesus, but can you explain more to me? You know, and that kind of stuff, like having those opportunities. It's just been a very, very interesting and very special season for us to be able to do ministry in a different way, and to have these kinds of opportunities to connect with people that we never otherwise would have come across. So yeah, I think it's been amazing.
So tell me, how does that start? Like, I'm just curious, like with YouTube, like you guys were like, did you, I guess just the story of like, hey, let's start a YouTube channel. And then like a few people start watching, and like you call your friends and like, hey, check out our YouTube. Put it on social media. And then obviously it's grown. Like, has it, I guess, how is that? Like, were you be like, oh my gosh, there's 10,000 followers. Oh my gosh, there's 20,000. Oh my gosh, there's, I didn't even really understand it. She's like, do you know how many followers the Millers have on YouTube? And I don't watch YouTube, so I didn't know.
Well, actually,
I was like, I don't even know, what do you mean? Like, I knew you guys had a YouTube channel and you guys do cool stuff on Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, no, they have like hundreds of thousands of followers that watch their YouTube. Really? Like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was, is Grayson, our daughter, you know, she was like, oh my gosh, that guy looks so familiar. And cause she was on YouTube. And I was like, what guy? And so, because I didn't know, like, you know, you kind of get weirded out when your daughter says that. And, anyway, and I was like, oh, that's Stephen. And I thought, cool, you know? And then I was like, oh, they have a show. And then I looked down there, and I was like, oh my gosh, they have a big show. And so, but what's so cool about y'all is that it's just, we know you. And I mean, it's just such a neat thing because of your humility and just the, like I said, the purity of the ministry is appealing to me because we've been around people that do ministry for a living in the integrity and the purity behind it. It just isn't there, you know? And so it's so awesome to see you guys doing this and doing it well. And I'm proud of you, if that matters.
Thank you. It does.
Yeah. Very encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we didn't start out on YouTube thinking like, oh, we're going to do this and build it and it's going to be, you know, big or anything like that. Like, we put together our adoption video as the first one. Yeah. We just kind of wanted to share the story of what that was like going and bringing our children home. And we put it up on YouTube, and that just picked up pretty quickly. And yeah. I think it was within the first week or so, we had like 10,000 subscribers, and we were like,
yeah, it was quick.
Oh, cause we thought it was going to be like friends and family that were going to watch it, you know, and that it was probably not going to grow that much.
Yeah.
So that's when we started having the conversation of like, do we want to like continue with this and maybe share more of our story? And so we started doing that, and it's just been really interesting to see how God has grown it.
I think for us, like, we, you know, I didn't realize YouTube was what YouTube was, right? Because we've been around since the beginning of YouTube. So, like, I always thought YouTube was like Vimeo. You know, you upload your video so that you can host it and put it on your website or share it on a whatever. But I didn't know it was like a real social media thing with a really intelligent algorithm that could, you know, do great at recommending your video and all kinds of stuff like that. So we really didn't have any clue. And to some extent, we still don't really have any clue.
Like, we still feel like beginners. Yeah.
Like, we feel like we're so far from being professional, you know, YouTubers or whatever, because we're just trying to tell our story. But at the same time, like, it's pretty cool to see. And so, like, pretty quick after we started, we knew we were going to have to pay for brain surgery, bilateral brain surgery for our son, Lincoln. And it was still up in the air as to whether insurance was going to cover it. It was pretty scary. We adopted a little boy from China 3 years ago who has moyamoya and left-side hemiplegia, which is a form of cerebral palsy caused by a bunch of strokes. And we were just now figuring out, like, what's going on with that. All the tests were coming back. We knew we were going to have to go have bilateral brain surgery for him. And so that happened, like, 2 months after we started YouTubing. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of thought, oh, you know, maybe we can make like a couple of $100 and like that'll help pay for some of these brain surgeries, you know? And just people resonated with that story. I think they resonated with a family who was going through that kind of difficulty and still doing it with hope. And so I think that had a lot to do with it early on. And then last year, Amanda posted a video of just like a day in the life of a mom. It was a morning routine of a mom of 7 kids. And we had been kind of hanging around like 30,000, you know, 35,000 subscribers, growing fairly slowly at that point. And then she posted that, and like, for whatever reason, everyone
people
was like,
see,
oh,
how
my
you
gosh,
take care of 7 you know. Kids or something.
And so, like, it was like Friday we hit 100,000 subscribers, and then Monday we hit 200,000 subscribers, and then the Friday after that we hit 300,000 subscribers, and it was like, what is happening right now? So that was kind of the moment. That was sort of that tipping point moment for us when we realized, like, how we could actually do this. Like, this could be what we do, you know, maybe, like, so we did the most responsible thing possible, and I quit my job, and and, you know, it's definitely been a roller coaster with 2020 and everything that's happened that has impact across every, you know, genre of everything. Mm-hmm. Particularly with brands like wanting to, because, you know, you make your money off of Google AdSense, like advertising, like whenever they put those little commercials in your video, and people weren't really doing that, you know, during the whole COVID lockdown thing. They just didn't have the budget or whatever, I don't know. So we were like, man, Lord, like, give us the faith to like keep going, or give us a, you know, vision of what to do or whatever. And he's provided all along. So that's been really a blessing, because there were points where we were like, man, like, what do we need to do now?
Yeah, do we make the wrong choice? But the thing about this year that I am so appreciative of is that I feel like this was just kind of a change in the journey for us, where you did get to come home and we got to work together, and our kids got to see dad every day. And it's a very different pace than, you know, having year after year where you're just working so hard. And ministry is amazing. Ministry is a blessing, but there's a lot of challenges with that as well. And so I think it is important, you know, a lot of times people will take sabbatical so that they can rest and recharge. And so in some ways, I feel like that's kind of what this is for us, is that it's a different pace where daddy gets to be home and, you know, the kids get to see him every day, and we just have a lot of quality family time. And so, and to work together has been really, really cool. But, and for all that to happen during this year where we would have really needed it anyways, you know, it's just such a challenging year. It all just kind of happened at the perfect timing. So it's been cool to see how the Lord just orchestrated all of that. But I think it's been one of the best things that's ever happened to our family.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your kids a little bit. So you guys do have 7 kids, and that is a lot of kids. And I mean, we have 4. I can't imagine 7. And so I do need to watch that video of how to manage. That's incredible. And so let's talk about them a little bit. And whatever you guys want to say. I mean, because you've adopted. I want to talk about adoption too. So we've got a couple biological kids and a couple kids via adoption. And so let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah. So we knew adoption was going to be a part of our story before we even got married. We had talked about how someday that's probably something that we would want to do, that we felt called to do. We got married so young, so we weren't even old enough to adopt when we got married. We were talking about it. We're like, okay, in 4 years, we'll be old enough to adopt a child. We had our 2 daughters biologically. And when they were 5 and 7 is when we adopted Jude and Liam as a sibling group from Ethiopia. And that was a life-changing kind of journey for us that, you know, going to Ethiopia and falling in love with their birth country and culture and all of that. And just seeing the need to, it just breaks your heart. And so I don't think we were not even home from Ethiopia with our sons before, like, we really thought, you know, we'll probably adopt again.
Yeah.
There's just such a great need, and we had room in our home, room in our hearts. And so we brought them home and really settled into a family with 4 kids pretty well that first year. And then I got really sick and had all sorts of crazy, mysterious health issues that we couldn't figure out, and ended up getting diagnosed with a condition called MTHFR, which is where your body doesn't absorb B vitamins properly. So everything was kind of shutting down. My body was like not working well. So I got that diagnosed and was able to take some supplements for that. And the doctor in that office, she diagnosed me with that. And she said, I also think that you might be pregnant right now, so you need to start taking these supplements immediately, because I had had several miscarriages. She said, go take these supplements and also take a pregnancy test. And so I went home and it was positive. And that's Ethan. That's our 3rd biological child. And so I'm so, so grateful that we were able to have that diagnosis when we did, because I would have miscarried him as well. And so then we had 5 kids at that time. And
am I crazy? Like, I feel like we should adopt again.
Yeah. When Ethan was 3 was when we, when we started the process to adopt.
Yeah. We were driving a Suburban and I was like, well, we got room for 1 more, so let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were really educating ourselves about older child adoption. We had friends who had adopted from China. And we knew that in China, children age out of the system at the age of 14, the day they turn 14, and the statistics for kids who age out of the system is just really heartbreaking. And a lot of kids that are older don't get adopted, because that is a lot scarier, I think, in people's mind than adopting an infant. And so we thought, you know, let's just educate ourselves on what this would look like. and if this could be something that the Lord's leading us to, and really felt like it was. And so we were matched with our daughter, Penelope, who is right there in between Reese and Kira's age. And we were just praying that the Lord would, you know, just cause them to have a really strong bond and that they'd be really good friends. And it's been incredible to see, to see how much they are. Like it's just such a blessing. But we didn't just adopt Penelope. We got halfway through the adoption process.
Yeah.
And I was having dreams and all these different things. The Lord was just, I know it was the Lord. It was just confirming that we were supposed to bring home two children from China. And Stephen was very nervous about that idea.
He's like, I think we're supposed to adopt two. And I was like, you know, I'm not hearing the Lord on that.
We have room for one more in our Suburban, not two.
So I actually started praying. I was like, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll pray and like, we'll see what God says. And so I did. And like for a month prayed. And like by the end of the month, I was like, I still don't have a word from God on this. Like, I don't know what he's saying. What I do know is like, he's the father to the fatherless. He loves adoption. He puts orphans in homes. And so like, you know, why don't we just try? And if our adoption agency says yes, and China says yes, both of which are highly unlikely, we'll move forward.
Yeah.
And it was almost like one of those Jonathan moments. Jonathan, and he's like, hey, let's go take care of those, you know, uncircumcised Philistines, and maybe God will give us victory. Who knows? Yeah. You know, that's kind of how I felt. And and so we did. And we asked our agency, and our agency was like, well, we're pretty sure you're insane, so please take this mental health test. And so we did that. And
they just wanted to make sure that, like, so they don't allow two children to be adopted at the same time that are not from a sibling group, except for on a case by case basis. If they feel like your family is equipped for that and that it would be, you know, a good dynamic, then they'll do that. But there's a lot of hoops to jump through. And so we had to get approval from our adoption agency. Mm-hmm. And then they, once they approved us, they sent it over to China to ask if they would approve us as well. And
with
so,
the caveat that China will probably say no too. So we were like, okay, well, we'll see.
But all along I was like, I know that the Lord is calling us to this. I do. And there's just so many ways that he confirmed that. But it took several months. We were waiting to hear back. And I kept thinking, like, did I hear wrong? Like, am I just way off on this? And we were getting ready to go out one evening. And I had this sinking feeling. I was like, I feel like maybe I just missed it. Maybe, you know, we're not supposed to. And I started crying. And I was telling Stephen, I'm like, why would I have been so sure that the Lord had called us to this? And his phone dinged at that moment, and it was an incoming email from the agency, and it was them saying that they had gotten approval from China. And so Stephen's like, we're both crying. He's like, there's your sign. Like,
there it is.
And that's our son, Lincoln. He's our youngest. He's five now, and he is the happiest kid you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. He's just always giggling and smiling, and for a child who's been through so much medically, it's remarkable to see. There have been a lot of unknowns. You know, we had these scary diagnoses. Is that how you say it?
Diagnoses.
we had those early on. You know, we thought he had had a stroke as a baby and that he would just need physical therapy. So to get him home and realize he has this condition that's going to cause more strokes if he doesn't have brain surgeries, you know, that was really scary. But it's been incredible to see how God has, you know, led our family, sustained our family, grown our family in so many ways through that. And he came out of those surgeries and has just healed so well. And now he's walking when the doctors thought he maybe wouldn't walk. He's starting to talk, and we didn't think that was going to be possible. And so it's been incredible to just see the Lord's faithfulness through all of this.
Yeah.
All right. As I'm listening to you talk, and one thing you said, it says, did I hear wrong? Mm-hmm. And I think something that can be hard, as a Christian is so, especially as a Christian, I think is when God calls us to something and then he answers this call, and then you bring Lincoln home and his medical stuff isn't quite like you thought it would be. It was exponentially harder, and it was going to cost more money, and it was just way worse than you thought it would be. And was there ever this intersection between you and the Lord where you were like, what the heck? I mean, you so clearly allowed him to be a part of our family, but this type of suffering is not what I signed up for. And I know for me, like, just to be completely vulnerable, Matt also has the MTHFR deal, and we learned about that when he was in New York. And I heard so clearly that we were supposed to go to New York, just like you, like, just as clear as can be. I heard God said, you're supposed to go to New York, and I thought it was just going to be this. And then when it happened, cause it was kind of weird, like he signed with the Astros, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I didn't hear God right. And then the Astro thing fell through, which was kind of bizarre. And then he did sign with New York a couple weeks later or so. And I was like, oh, I did hear from the Lord. And there was this excitement that like existed in my heart. I was like, what's God going to do? And the season in New York was one of the most difficult seasons we've ever been a part of. Not necessarily, I mean, you played fine, but he got real sick there, and there was just so much suffering in New York. And yeah. I know for me, like, there was this time where I was just so disappointed in the Lord, just to be completely honest, because I was like, wait, you called us here, and yet this is what you called us here for? And it was just so hard. And did you guys experience that? And at all or not? I mean, maybe it's just my immature faith.
it's so true. And that's something that we've really wrestled with over the past few years, is I think just reframing our perspective. But like, God calls us to things for a reason. And sometimes we don't understand all of that. And sometimes we can kind of piece it all together and that. But it is really difficult. I think being honest with our feelings and being honest with God, because he obviously knows how we're feeling, I think that's important. But yeah. like we bring home this child and we think, hey, we're trying to do the right thing here. And then we have just all these really difficult and really scary challenges pop up. And so that was something we really wrestled with. It's like, okay, God, where are you in this? And, you know, how are we going to get through this? Cause at that time, you know, we didn't even have the means to handle it. So we're like, how are we going to do this? Yeah. So it was really scary, and I dealt with some depression for sure.
Yeah. Me too. Was really scary for me. I'd never dealt with depression before, you know? And, I really went through that. And I think something that really helped me was, you know, you read the story about Jesus telling his disciples to get in the boat. And they get in the boat. They're doing what he told them to do, you know, and then they go out into the water and the storm hits and it's just insane. They probably were like, what the heck? I mean, they did think what the heck, because Jesus is taking a nap and they're like, what the heck, Jesus, don't you care that we're going to die?
Yeah, we're going to die out here.
And he's like, come on, guys, really? You little faith. Like, so I feel like Jesus, when he calls us to do things, isn't necessarily calling us to ease. Sometimes he's calling us to suffering. But it's in the midst of that suffering that he can say, hey, look, I'm stronger than the storm and I'm here in the ship with you. And that's when our faith grows. You know, that's the moment that the disciples are like, who the heck is this guy that like even the wind and the waves obey his voice? Like, that's what happened. I feel like that's what happened with us. And just a little story for you guys too. We were going through that in the middle of that, and not just with Lincoln, but with Penelope, because she had a struggle when she came home. I mean, you can imagine being 12 years old and leaving your home country that you've ever known, all the food you've ever known, the language you've ever known, the people you've ever known. What we knew that she loved was baseball. She was a big baseball fan. So Matt, whenever you were playing for New York and you came and played against the Rangers, and I got to take Penelope to that game, and you let us down on the field and all that, that was a big moment for her of like building trust and relationship as a family. So like, even in the midst of all that was going on with you guys, I don't know if I've ever even told you that, dude, but like, in the middle of your suffering and what you were going through, you guys were such a huge blessing to our family. That like, that's the kind of thing God is always doing behind the scenes that we never know, you know.
we have a picture of Penelope with you and Steven out on the field, and she has the biggest smile on her face. And it was
like, this is the first smile we've seen.
Real genuine smile. And it was incredible. It was one of the one of those first moments of just genuine bonding that happened once we got home with her. So that was incredible. But it is like we've really been just kind of diving into the topic of suffering the past few years, because there has been a lot of suffering in our families. Watching your kids suffer is hard, and then you're struggling, you know, that's hard. And so trying to find God in the suffering and understand the greater purpose of suffering, that's a hard thing for anyone to understand. I know there's a lot of great resources out there, but I feel like that has been something that has grown our faith more than anything else. It's not been these incredible highs. And it's like, you know, you hear the Lord and then something amazing happens, but our faith has really been grown in those moments where it's like, I don't feel like I can go on, or where are you, God? What's going on in those moments to see him sustain us and to see what he can do through that, which sometimes you don't see the end result immediately. And maybe it's years down the line, but trusting like he's at work here and he's doing something greater than we can even understand in that moment has been life-changing for us to try to even understand that. But he's been so faithful, and that's the only thing we can say. Like, it's God's grace and his faithfulness that has gotten us through this far and will continue to, whether that's in the suffering or in those incredible highs as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay, let's talk about Christmas a little bit, because it's Christmas season, right? And you guys love Christmas. We love Christmas. So what sort of traditions do you do with having such a diverse family? Because my education is embarrassing when it comes to other countries. Like, I've traveled all over this country, but I mean, I've been to Mexico. And so outside of that, I mean,
around all over that.
Yeah, around all the Americans at the Four Seasons. So it's really embarrassing. It's kind of funny. We were there last year, and I was working out in a really nice gym and listening to Francis Chan. And I was kind of like, you know, Francis, I'm out. You know, you're making me feel so guilty about being in Mexico at a really nice resort and not doing some active service. And so anyway, but what is there anything special that you do for your kids that are not Americans, or they are Americans, but kids that are not from here?
It's funny this question comes up right now, because the Amazon Prime guy just delivered my Santa Claus costume.
Oh, excellent.
Because for this year, like, they're not doing pictures with Santa, like, anywhere. So I was like, well, I'll just be Santa. That'll be
good. Yeah, that's a surprise for the kids. We do a lot of things with the kids where we're celebrating their birth culture and all of that, the special holidays. So we've got Chinese New Year. We've got Ethiopian New Year. Moon Festival and Autumn Moon Festival, that kind of stuff. Those are the things that we really celebrate. Christmas, like, Christmas in China is not really a thing.
It's like one day and they eat KFC. That's what they do. It's like KFC is really special. So,
but
that's
they don't know. So it was very interesting that first year that Penelope came home, she's like FaceTiming with her foster family back in China, and she's showing them like the nativity scene on our mantle. And she's like, explaining to them, and they're like, well, what's that? Who's that? She's like, this is baby Jesus, and this is why we celebrate. So she's like explaining to them
it was pretty cool.
The story of Christmas. So it's been very interesting to see her kind of understanding why we celebrate Christmas and what that's all about. And then even telling people back in China, like, hey, this is what we're doing. This is why. It's been, that's been really, really cool to see.
Yeah. If you go to Hong Kong, there's a little bit more of a Western influence with Christmas itself, but even then it's still only like maybe a day. But the rest of China doesn't really, I mean, maybe some of the bigger cities will do something with Christmas, but not as much. So that's been fun, because Penelope is just like every year, like, she's experiencing it like for the first time, it feels like, you know, because like we, and even like 2 days ago we were watching a Christmas movie, she's like, why do we watch the same movies every year?
These are special Christmas movies.
It's like, there's new movies out, they have new ones, like, we can watch different ones, this is okay. Like, but it's what we do.
Oh, I love that. All right, last question, and this is kind of random, but I've been thinking about it as we, okay. So you mentioned the keto diet and then, and you've had a tremendous success with that. Cause earlier you mentioned that you were like 300 pounds in high school, and I'm sure you were exaggerating a little bit, but you weren't.
I was 5'3", 300 pounds until my senior year. I had a growth spurt, but I was still 300 pounds, but I worked out every day and it never worked. But like, I was following the food pyramid and it was like, oh yeah, just keep it under 30 grams of fat per day and you can eat all the carbs you want. So I'm like, oh, I'll eat like pasta with any, without anything on it, or I'll eat like potatoes without anything. And it was like a whole, it was not enjoyable at all, you know, but like, I just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and couldn't figure it out. And then I read about the Atkins diet right after I graduated, and I lost 115 pounds the year we got married. But then I've been yo-yoing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for like the whole time. It's been really, really frustrating. So I started doing keto again last December and lost another 50 pounds. And now it's like, now that's becoming a struggle again too. So I'm trying to like figure, I've got a trainer I'm going to start working with, I hope. I'm actually going to go have lunch with him today. His name's Craig Caperso. He's like a big time like bodybuilder guy, but he owns the boxing gym that I'm going to right now. And I'm like, bro, I need you to train me. And he's like, you want to look like this? And I'm like, yes, I do. I do.
But keto's been good for you.
Keto's been good.
And Lincoln does keto as well for seizures, because he was having a bunch of seizures after his brain surgeries. And so we put him on the keto diet, which is supposed to help with epilepsy. And he hasn't had a seizure in the longest time. So that's been really good for both of you.
It's easier to sustain than some other diets.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a lot of the wisdom is like, it doesn't really matter what diet you do, just do what works for you, you know, what you can actually stick with. And that's been the easiest one for me over the years. But like, I'm probably going to start doing macros more, which is sort of counter my personality, which is like, hey, let's just go with the flow, you know, actually having to be a little more regimented with it. But I feel like if I'm going to keep losing, I'm going to need to get into some kind of like actual regimented diet, which do what you got to do. You know,
not this time of the year, right?
Right.
Take a break for Christmas and then get back to it.
And then Amanda, with you too, like I, with the MTHFR, there is some tweaks that you have to make as far as diet goes. And some of the decisions you make, even like deodorant and lotions and things of that sort. And so I asked because it's table 40 and, you know, maybe this is just a spin on like what you eat at the table. Anyway, but talk to us just briefly about some of the things that have had to change with that diagnosis.
Yeah. So the big one for me is they were saying that if you are eating like fortified foods, so that's bread and cereal and that kind of stuff, if it has synthetic folic acid, that is going to basically block your ability to absorb real folate. And so, I've been eating pretty much gluten-free for years now, and that has helped a ton. And, so just avoiding anything that's enriched grains, that kind of thing, and just trying to really up, you know, leafy greens and fresh fruits and vegetables, that kind of thing. We as a family try to eat pretty healthy. And so we're trying to just all do that, but definitely staying gluten-free helps me a lot. And also, yeah, avoiding toxins and that kind of thing. We're pretty naturally minded. So, you know, things that don't have a lot of chemicals and pesticides and that kind of stuff is really important.
Yeah.
We're big into essential oils and that kind of thing.
I remember that about you guys. In fact, I think I still buy essential oils from some connection
from your sister. Yeah. Cause yeah. I was staying with you guys and Grayson had a cough that wouldn't go away.
Yeah.
Thieves. Try this. Yeah. Yeah.
On her feet. We did that. Absolutely. And the whole house smelled like thieves. Yeah. That's a bad thing. Bad thing. All right, you guys, this was fun. So
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks
for loving listening to the podcast. It's awesome.
Thank you for listening to Table 40, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports and faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.